pilots to navigate without depending solely on railroad tracks and landmarks to find their way. By 1930, L.C. Elliott, Airways Extension Supervisor for the Department of Commerce, proposed a plan to complete the southwestern section from Dallas to El Paso and on to San Diego. While in El Paso meeting with city leaders and reporters, Elliott and his pilot C.I. Burnett said the plan was to complete the link to El Paso in about 2 months, with lighthouses every 10 miles at a cost of $400 a mile. Soon, airmail and commercial flights were going to be able to travel into the evening hours along the Great Highway of Light. More history next week on El Paso History Moments. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
This El Paso History Moment is brought to you by Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services. Go online to sargentinventoryservices.com.
Was that a real announcer?
That's a real announcer.
Hey!
A deep voice.
Go online and see what happened to the Sargent people. What happened to the people? I went online, there you were.
Oh, we were standing there doing nothing.
No, you were doing video of somebody's house and their possessions and all that kind of
stuff. Actually, we were doing a collection for a museum this week. We were looking at doing an inventory for them, so that'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
But that's the kind of thing you guys do in your business. All right, this whole business here was for whom?
Yes, and this is for the El Paso, the History Alliance, which is a great group of people that are out there preserving our history in El Paso, and they've got over 45,000 followers on their Facebook page, so get out there and check them out on the El Paso History Alliance Facebook page, and you could call Bernie Sargent if you'd like at 915-581-7920 and get involved if you'd like to, or just if you have questions, give him a call. He can direct you where to go on whatever you have a question on.
And that other crowd that helps us out on Facebook.
That wild crowd out there, Barbara Given Maney, who keeps the Facebook page Remember in El Paso Win, which is a wonderful Facebook page that has a lot of history and pictures and history stories on El Paso and the region. And she's got these wonderful, little helpers out there, and one of them, which is Jim Carlton. He's one of the administrators that helps keep up with the hard work of putting those Facebook pages together.
Remember in El Paso When. I'm going to ask Ed Santi Esteban, do you go on Facebook and go to that site, Remember in El Paso When?
Yes, I do.
That has the archive pictures of the world in there.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, it's amazing what they have. Edwin Chesley. Edwin, do you go and see that stuff? Because I know both you guys are Facebook types.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting world to look at that. There's so many times we've asked her for pictures and we get 10. it's amazing. So, all right, we're talking to Sarko with the Eds here, Edwin and Eduardo. And I find it fascinating that we went through from like 2010 to about 2014 or so, we were over there with cameras. The stacks came down in 2013, April 13th, I think it was. And that was a huge day. Where were you that day, Edward Santi Esteban?
I was above Calarero. There's a kind of a flat, where you going to the eastbound on the I-10. They had set up a tent, and they had all kinds of hors d'oeuvres there, so you phoned me there.
Oh, you were in the VIP crowd.
Right.
I was in the next group over. We didn't get any food.
My gosh. It was nice and cool, and I really enjoyed that,
What did you think of that day? You worked there for 20-some-odd years.
Well, more like 30, but anyway.
Okay, 30-some-odd years, give or take. Who cares at this point? But the point is you had experience, and here comes this stack coming down. What did you think when you saw that?
Well, it was kind of sad, but nevertheless, I never thought that the inner stack was going to project out of the outer stack.
Isn't that weird? The outer stack dropped first.
Yeah.
About 30, 40 feet.
Right.
And then it started leaning on the inner stack.
Right.
But people don't realize there were two complete smokestacks standing there, and you only saw the outside one. The inside one was constructed for why, Ed Santi Esteban?
Right.
Why? Why did they do this?
Well, it was to maintain temperature of the gases, to this way you would have the draft going out the stack.
We went there when you let us into that stack finally. We got in there with cameras, and the equipment was still sort of attached to the big hole in the side of the stack for incoming.
Right.
Kinda. And the door was hard to open because of the pressure. And as soon as we got the door open, you had to worry that your hat was going to fly straight up the chimney.
That's right. That's right. The draft was way up there,
Okay, tell them why. Why was that big draft such a big deal all by itself? There was no equipment running.
Well, you got to figure that you need to move the opacity of the smoke up in a high elevation to where you have a draft in itself. And then also at the same time, the inner stack, it was like a like a little tornado, you know, you have the draft going in, and then by the time it reaches the outer stack up on top, you would have it pushes the opacity higher to where it would follow a stream, you know, it would go down whichever way the wind was blowing.
828 feet stack, you had different air pressure at the
That's
top
right,
and the
yeah.
bottom. So the air at the bottom naturally wanted to go to the top.
Right.
So it was just rushing up there no matter what.
Yeah.
And then they were pushing it with fans and stuff.
Oh, definitely. And then we had sometimes burners inside, you know, to maintain the temperature of the gas. Plus the inner stack was insulated 200 feet above from the ground to the, you know, part way up to, just to maintain temperature. Because a draft, you need heat, you know.
That was one of the most fascinating things I saw in the demolition of that whole place.
You know, here's another thing that a lot of people do not know. Many times I had surveyed in the plant all over, the 800-foot stack was 10 feet lower than the Mount Crystal Ray.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yes. Just barely different.
Right.
And we have a picture that I don't think I can put it online right now, but there's a picture one of the people took when they were up there surveying the stack. They were thinking about saving it at one point, so they sent some guys to rappel down the outside of the stack. They also rappelled down the inside of the stack, which people couldn't see. So we have video and pictures of all of that. But the head cam off the guy, we were taking shots off of one of his GoPro head cams. It was bizarre stuff from up there. There's a video online. If you want to go on Facebook, you can find this one on El Paso History on my Facebook page. There's a three-minute video of the guy walking around the top of the stack, and the three-minute video is all from his GoPro and his helmet. It'll make you want to, like, fall over. Because you're at 828 feet, the guy's leaning over and leaning back. And, like, and I've had so many people say, you can't put that on there. It makes me sick. And I said, is that why you watched it four times? I
mean, yeah. There you go.
That's the part. No, that's
so there's a video out there if you want to see it. Now, so many fascinating things. I mentioned, let me just briefly mention this. And then you guys come up with whatever you want to talk about. Because I was fascinated by when the demolition occurred, they sold the scrap metal of the plant to one company. But they sold the mineral rights of the ore to another company. So when they got to the big furnace that they turned off full of copper, well, one guy owned the copper, one guy owned the furnace. So what'd they do, Ed?
Well, you know, the demolition guys, they bought the demolition for a price.
Right.
They paid, you know, over $1 million or whatever. So whatever they would salvage and sell, it's their pocket money. Simple as that.
But they had the furnace full of one guy's copper, and yeah. The furnace belonged to the other guy. They technically peeled the furnace away from the copper.
Oh, they did, definitely.
And remember when they dumped that big blob of copper out on the ground? It didn't look like anything, but they drilled holes in it, and it was pure copper.
We call that the deep trench, you know. Back in the old days, when they were going to drain the furnace, we would go up there and set up with a transit and shoot elevations, and then we would mine out the front of the furnace to let the minerals, I'm talking about gold and other impurities, to drain into this temporary pond that they made, you know. And from there, they would remine it and then reprocess it.
It's amazing what happened. You guys were telling us that when they had a huge spill of copper, immediately what they would do was throw these big right-angle rebars in it.
Yeah.
Huge. I mean, the biggest rebar you can get your hands around. They throw that out in the molten copper. Why?
That's to help bring in the slag in itself, you know, help it kind of separate and, you know, through the process. Plus also
You can pick it up.
Yeah. But you couldn't really pick it up. What we did, we hired a company from Midland, Odessa, that they had a hydro blaster, and it was 30,000 PSI.
What?
And they went in there and they jet stream and they cut the copper because it was the only way you can do it. You couldn't do it with a jackhammer. A jackhammer will never get to it at all.
Wow.
It would cut about a quarter inch wide.
Wow.
And it went down like 18 inches or more, you know, as far as the jet stream could do it. And then from there, you had chunks. So those chunks were recovered and they would collect it on the ladle there, and then they would wait for the day to reprocess the scrap copper.
The one that came out of that furnace I'm talking about was about the size of half of a little Volkswagen Beetle.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good size.
Yeah.
And so when they dumped that out on the ground, I said to the bankruptcy trustee, can you can you save that for me? He looked at me, of course, like I was an idiot. He said, that's about $700,000 worth of copper. No, the answer is no.
It was worth more than that.
Was it more than that?
Oh, heck yes. Yeah, because when you have unsmelted copper ore, you know, that's already being processed through the reverberatory, you have impurities.
And those impurities are gold.
And the impurities, the only way you're going to separate those is in the refinery. When you you cast the anodes, you know, 2 inches thick, you know.
Right.
And usually an anode weighed like 825 pounds, you know, and that was chipped out to the refineries. And then they have the tank houses up in the refineries where they would process the electrolyte, you know, the current. And they had
Phelps Dodge down over here on Hawkins.
It does the same thing.
Yeah.
That's cathodes, you know, what they're sending, you know, those plates. You know, so all that has to be a process, and you separate impurities.
Amazing process there.
You never could have done that on your barbecue in the backyard.
No, you can't.
If you see you out there with a pan.
If you got past 800 degrees, you're in trouble. But this is 2,500 to melt.
Yeah.
And the furnaces ran at 3,200 degrees.
Yeah.
I'm getting hot thinking about
toasty.
It.
Toasty.
That's right. Let's go outside and cool off. It's 100. Oh,
Different type of s'mores there, I'll
we
tell you.
We stirred up somebody, 544-5876. Name is Vince. Vince is on the radio. Good morning, Vince.
Hey, how's it? Good morning, guys. I'm enjoying the show. Hey, I just wanted to say something. I was in the Marine Corps in 1983 when there was a movie release that was filmed in El Paso called Lone Wolf McQuade.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
Chuck Norris and David Carradine, Barbara Carrera. But anyways, after the first scene that was filmed in Cattlemen's, after they stole the horses, the very next scene, they flew over the Asarco stack.
Oh.
And when I was in the Marine Corps up there in Okinawa, I watched that movie. Oh, wow, man. As soon as I saw that, it was near and dear to my heart because I was so far away from El Paso. Now, you want to talk about El Paso icons, that smokestack, when I lived in California and used to come over here on vacation, I'd pass it by that smokestack, and I said, yep, I'm home.
Oh, yeah.
Just wanted to make an observation about that.
A lot of people have that. Well, Vince, thanks a lot. And thanks for what you do on the reenactment business, by the way.
All right.
We've got good video of you shooting people, but they all got up. It's okay.
Semper fi.
All right, thank you. Take care easy.
All right, goodbye.
Good to talk to you. Well, we're going to take some more calls here because we're going to do trivia. You ready for this?
We do trivia.
Try this again. We got all those questions active.
Okay.
You're talking about medals. You got Pepe's to give away. Pepe's $20 certificate is something to think about.
That's worthwhile. You can get a lot of food for $20 at Pepe's.
And them here DVDs are $23 in the stores. And the one about the smelter, it's
very
an
good
hour explaining the stacks coming down, what the stacks were about. Remember one day there were two guys climbed up the outside of the stacks, and we put cameras on those guys?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. No,
well, we had the beacon lights changed out because they were burned out, you know.
He had to go up and change the light bulbs.
Right.
So we put a GoPro on the guy's shoulder, and boy, that is weird to watch.
It almost sounds like a joke.
Yeah, what's the punchline? The answer is don't fall.
How many people did it take to change a light bulb on the Asarco Tower?
And three cameras on the ground.
Cost?
Yeah.
It was a lot. All right, so enough of that. Do some questions here.
Okay, our first question is for $20 in food certificates to Pepe's or at El Paso Gold DVTs. What are some of the metals that Asarco processed over the years? So
well,
we talked about some of those metals.
You take one or more answers?
One or more, yeah. If you can get one of them, hey, if you can give me the scientific name, you'll get a bonus. Okay, and then the second one is, when did Asarco officially close, which we did talk about?
It closed for bankruptcy but never reopened.
Yeah,
so
but that means the date that the factory closed down that is written in the papers and everything else that I confirmed, it will only go by that date.
And that's the day Eddie went to a meeting and everybody was called to a meeting, right?
Yeah.
And they said, hey, this is it. And people look around like, oh, I guess this is it. And the guys turned off the furnaces. They put their gloves down and walked the heck out of there.
They blew the steam out of the powerhouse boilers and all that. And that was the last sound that you would hear, you know. And everybody teared on that.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, it was sad, I'm sure. All right, enough of that. 544-whatever.
5876 or 544-KTSM.
What's the scariest thing about going to the dentist? Opening your mouth or opening your wallet? Because just a simple cleaning can cost $150, and things like root canals can cost you hundreds more. If you don't have dental insurance to help, you should give Physicians Mutual Insurance Company a call. 1-800-500-7616. This isn't a discount plan or preventive-only coverage. This is real dental insurance that helps pay for checkups right away, so you can call today and get your teeth cleaned tomorrow. Plus, it helps cover the more expensive procedures you might need down the road. Fillings, crowns, bridges, even costly dentures. There's no deductible and no annual maximum. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies, even if you're retired or on Medicare. Plus, you can choose any dentist you'd like. That's right, any dentist you want. Call and we'll rush you a free information kit with all the details. 1-800-500-7616. That's 1-800-500-7616. 1-800-500-7616.
The trucks are rolling in. 20 ribeyes for $25.
20 ribeyes for $25?
You heard right. 20 ribeyes for $25 direct to you.
Where?
Two locations open right now at the Cielo Vista Mall and at the Sunland Park Mall.
20 ribeyes.
For $25, yes, that's almost a dollar per steak. It's a mega meat blowout sale.
It's a parking lot party.
Look for the big truck and big tent open right now at the Cielo Vista Mall and at the Sunland Park Mall.
20 ribeyes for $25?
Yes, that's 20 ribeyes for $25. Plus crazy bulk deals of premium steak, mega ribeyes, T-bones, fillets, New York strips.
Plus chicken, seafood, and pork.
20 ribeyes for $25 right now.
That's almost a dollar per steak.
Limited time. Look for the big tent and big truck. Open right now at the Cielo Vista Mall and at the Sunland Park Mall parking lots.
Now accepting Amex and EBT.
We're here now and we'll see you there.
When working at a growing business, you wear many hats. The new business hat, the buying toner for the copy machine hat, the sifting through tons of resumes hat. You can throw away that last hat thanks to Indeed.com. When posting your job, Indeed lets you add screener questions that give you a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates. So go ahead, dust off that extra long lunch hat. Hiring's better when you've got your short list. Save time on hiring when you post a job on Indeed. Get started today at Indeed.com/hire.
What would you do if you won the lottery? Maybe take a long vacation. Bahamas, Maui, Paris. Maybe fill an entire pool with nacho cheese and have the world's biggest nacho party. Maybe get that tractor you've always wanted. Well, the Texas Lottery has paid out more than $21 billion to lottery winners. People who simply had a dream and bought a ticket. Lottery.com makes it even easier to play and track winnings. Download the Lottery.com app and get your first ticket for free. So go ahead, dream on. What would you do if you won? Go to Lottery.com to learn more.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Pohl.
We got trivia about to hit the fan here, but we need to tell you who's coming in here next week on the 16th of June. We have got a Vietnam-era Special Forces reunion. It's on that weekend in El Paso nationwide at the convention, but we're going to have some of them stop in and tell us some of their stories about the Vietnam-era Special Forces people. June 23rd, New Mexico Museum of Space History's director, Chris Orwall, coming in. He's got history up his sleeves, and there's stuff going on up there, and they get some of the neat stuff from the space world to put in their museum and look at it. June 30th, what's the history of El Paso to a journalist who grew up in Fabens, Texas? We're going to ask Chris Babcock. He's one of the people who created the new El Paso Herald Post online, and he's seen a lot of El Paso history and made some. And do you realize he actually can own the name the El Paso Herald Post?
Oh, really? Yeah, did he buy it?
Do you know why? When the newspaper dumped it, they just didn't care.
Oh, yeah.
He picked it up. So anyway, that's on the 30th.
It's a great site.
Well, he's getting somewhere with that.
That's good.
That's on June 30th. July 7th, Isleta del Sur Pueblo. We got Rick Quesada coming in. They got a new museum exhibit at the tribe's museum. July 14th, and this is going to be different. July 14th, we got an author who wrote Abraham Lincoln and Mexico.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
All the interaction between Mexico and Lincoln was really unusual.
Yeah.
And so we got that coming in. There's a book. And then July 21, Classic Film Festival. So we got a busy summer coming up here.
Busy. Okay. And then now I've got the El Paso Archaeology Society is presenting at the Archaeology Museum on Trans Mountain. Joan Price, she's going to be speaking on petroglyphs and ceramics. That's going to be next Saturday at 2 p.m. And she's going to be speaking. Her program is going to be called Clay and Stone Petroglyphs at the Three Rivers Petroglyph Site, compared with Membres Ceramic Painted Bowls. And again, that's at 2 p.m. next Saturday, June 16th, at the El Paso Museum of Archaeology at Trans Mountain Road.
You know, that petroglyph site that they're talking about up north of Tularosa, Has anybody ever been there? It's three rivers.
No, I've never been there.
There's 20,000 petroglyphs.
I'd love to get up there.
Really?
Oh, it's run by BLM. You can actually go in and take a tour. And the Three Rivers has on 54, instead of turning right to go to Redoso, you go straight.
They have some abandoned mines up there, too, I think.
Well, they probably do. The Spanish were looking for stuff everywhere, people since then.
Well, just the mining. Yeah, there was a lot of mines. A lot of people had mines up there.
But they also had a pueblo of Indians up in there. And this 20,000 petroglyphs, it's on, about a 5 or 6 acre area that's sort of an outcropping. And it's perfect if you can come along with something sharp and a hammer-type thing to make pictures. And that they're etched into the stone. That's petro. Petro is rock.
Right.
Picto is when they paint them. They don't have any of those. These are the petros where they chisel them out.
Right, right.
That's a bizarre place. And they're telling stories in there and all kinds of stuff floating around. Go up there when you get a chance. It's a good day trip on your way to Redoso.
We've camped across a mountain over there, which is Big Bear Lake. Canyon.
But that's up in the mountain.
And Redoso, they call it Big Bear Canyon, and there's an abandoned mine up there, too, you know.
Oh, they were looking for stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
They really were. 544-5876. Nobody's going to try the trivia about when did the smelter shut down?
The audience has to stay after school today.
Well,
the whole audience.
They're going to have to come out and do penance at
Pepe's
with us.
That's right.
What were some of the metals that were processed? We talked about that.
Yeah. When did Sarco officially close? Everybody should be able to find that one or know it. I mean, good grief.
All right. We're going to eat the food. Heck
that's right.
You.
Sorry. Not
going
to share.
We're going to take a break and come back in here. Call us if you need to.
Or go to Facebook page.
Look at this on
I got the Sarco crew up. It's kind of a little cattywampus picture, but we got everybody in there this afternoon.
That's a very busy graphic there.
Yes, you like that.
Anyway, look at Facebook. Call us up if you need to.
915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
The trucks are rolling in. 20 ribeyes for $25.
20 ribeyes for $25?
You heard right. 20 ribeyes for $25 direct to you.
Where?
Two locations open right now at the Cielo Vista Mall and at the Sunland Park Mall.
20 ribeyes.
For $25, yes, that's almost a dollar per steak. It's a mega meat blowout sale.
It's a parking lot party.
Look for the big truck and big tent open right now at the Cielo Vista Mall and at the Sunland Park Mall.
20 ribeyes for $25?
Yes, that's 20 ribeyes for $25. Plus crazy bulk deals of premium steak, mega ribeyes, T-bones, fillets, New York strips.
Plus chicken, seafood, and pork.
20 ribeyes for $25 right now.
That's almost a dollar per steak.
Limited time. Look for the big tent and big truck. Open right now at the Cielo Vista Mall and at the Sunland Park Mall parking lots.
Now accepting Amex and EBT.
We're here now and we'll see you there.
The clock is ticking. Every day you put off buying life insurance can cost you big time. The older you get, the more you'll have to pay. And a sudden accident or unexpected illness could cause your rates to skyrocket or even make you uninsurable. Beat the clock. Call SelectQuote now. No hassle, no obligation. In minutes, you'll have a choice of your best rates from up to 10 highly rated life insurance companies. Richard, 40 years old, takes meds to control his cholesterol. Still, SelectQuote got him a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $25 a month. Under a dollar a day. Don't risk your family's security another minute. Get your free quote now. Just call 800-280-8787. That's 800-280-8787. 800-280-8787. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Go to ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history and for podcasts of our weekly radio show and for a list of area stores that carry our DVDs like El Paso's Waco Tanks, Mexican Revolution sites in El Paso, and Legends of El Paso's Mountains. 18 titles in all, plus links to dozens of TV stories about El Paso area history. Go to ephistory.com for a journey into El Paso's amazing history. ephistory.com.
Let me ask you a question. How long has it been since you've updated your home or business list of assets or property inventory? In the case of a loss by fire, theft, or natural disaster, the insurance company and police will ask for detailed descriptions and often require pictures as proof of ownership. If you can't remember, you can't recover. Contact Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services. Our process provides detailed documentation of what you own. There is no price tag on peace of mind. Call 915-581-7099.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
I tell you what's going to happen this week only in El Paso, Inc.
The wait is over. Find out who this year's Best of the Best winner is, Part 1.
And also how Mexico's news business is being squeezed by cartel violence and the government.
The El Paso.
It's your line.
No, El Paso. Your line because we only had two headlines this year.
Your name is Melissa.
I know.
Next to it, it says El Paso's locally owned business journal, El Paso, Inc.
Oh, I'm looking at it. I didn't get that one. Okay, Mike got the wrong script today, guys.
It's available for home or business delivery by going online to ElPasoInc.com.
Oh, I know, but you missed a lot. Okay.
Shall I say the line for you?
No.
Okay,
I think we got it. El Paso's premier business journal.
Are you ready for ABC?
That's right.
Here it comes. ABC. Sergio, hit the music. There you go. I see. He came in just at the right time, boss. Okay, this week only on ABC 7 Extra, the city of El Paso wants to use a TIRZ, that's a tax increment reinvestment zone, to help fool the people of El Paso. To help develop northwest El Paso. But the idea is coming under fire from those who feel it's the wrong tool for the job.
Sunday on ABC 7 Extra, host Saul Sainz will have both sides of the debate, and that's Sunday night at 10:30 p.m. only on ABC 7.
10:35 after the news, and I think they're going to have Mr. Bonart as one of the participants of
okay.
that. All right, you ready for the next event?
I think I'm ready.
Does Joe want trivia? Joe's on the air. Joe, what's on your mind this morning? Hey, Joe. Joe, talk to Joe. Sergio, put Joe on the air. Hey, Sergio, put Joe on the air, would you? Where's Joe? Telephone. There he is.
There's Joe.
Now we got you. Go ahead, Joe.
How you doing?
We finally got you on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, you wanted to answer one of the trivia questions?
Yeah, 1975, a circle.
What's the question you're answering?
Well, when did our circle officially close?
No.
No. No, way off. No, it wasn't that long ago.
The brand new big stack was created in 1966. By 75, the brand new stack was in its element. They had all the brand new controls for air pollution, and it was having a good time over to Sarco. But it wasn't 75 when the plant closed.
Quite a few years later.
Thank you for trying, though. Anything else on your mind?
Well, that's all. That's all.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
We're going to answer the question and give the certificate to Ed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If we want, we have the answers.
When did the plant close?
May 1999.
There you go. Okay. He even said May.
Yeah.
So we're going to give him a certificate.
I just was going for the year.
1999. And again, that was a closing, but that was a voluntary closing by the company.
Right. It was temporary closure because of the ore prices were real high, you know, and all that. Or not high, but low. And makes a story short, they just wanted to keep it like a mothball, you know. How you mothball a ship, you temporarily moor the ship into the pier and everything, and then when it's ready, well, it's unleash the lines and back in operation.
So you were the guy who was one of the engineers ready to keep it going and turn it back on?
Well, I was rehired, but at that time, it was Grupo Mexico, which they are still the owners of ASARCO, and they wanted to get an estimate what it would take to reopen the smelter and how much it was going to cost. So we did extensive studies on that.
$1 billion what?
At least $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
That was too much money back then, you know, and unfortunately they decided to just scrap it.
And at the same time, you had Elliot Shapley and other people trying to declare the thing a brownfield zone or whatever.
Right. They opposed everything, you know, but they weren't looking at the future of our new young engineers that were graduating from colleges like UTEP and other universities and all that. Because ASARCO was a tutor place for all this engineering.
Oh, yeah.
A learning experience
right.
for them.
And they would per diem students that would get hired to do work and everything, and they learned the on-hands experience, not just a bookworm.
Well, it was an amazing thing to watch it become unglued and put in trucks and hauled away. It was insane. And now what you see out there is a flat level playing field. But somebody like you would know exactly where things are under there. If they're going to go build something on that spot, can they build? They can build big things on that area?
It's remediated. It's been approved and by EPA, and then you can build anything on top of it.
Well, we'll see what happens, because there's a lot of room up there, like 120-some-odd acres on El Alto. And they kept the Asarco Slag Bridge, as you call it.
Right.
Mr. Puga insisted that that stay as part of the future Asarco. So TxDOT, they had to take it into account and make it a regular bridge that they dealt with.
Well, that'd be a good transit transportation from one hill to the other. At the same time, it'd be nice if TxDOT would say, hey, let's give El Paso Smelter credit. Let's put a sign, just like UTEP built those artificial picks, you know, on the, off the freeway.
Well, actually, that was TxDOT's money that built the picks.
Really?
You're right. That was TxDOT money.
Well, it wouldn't take much to do all right. A circle.
Ed Santiesteban has started the campaign here and now to have a sign put on both sides of the bridge,
right,
crosses I-10, that's a slag bridge, and it should say Asarco was here.
Every time,
or something.
Every time there's an accident on the freeway, it's next to the Asarco, and then anybody doesn't know Asarco, what the heck are you talking about? You know?
Yeah, you're right. They do mention that. That's true.
And
that's
it always
funny.
Says Asarco, but there's no stack there in the picture anymore.
That's right.
Or when they say I-10 and Asarco.
Right. And they we all know it because we're used to this.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what Jorge has to say. We stirred up a guy named Jorge. You're on the radio, Jorge. Good morning.
Okay, great. Good morning. I wanted to ask about the stack. You said that the stack was put in 1966. The one that we all are familiar with. Was there a stack prior to that one?
Oh, yeah, a bunch of
them. Oh, yes, definitely. Before the 800-foot stack was built, they had the 400-foot stack, the brick stack. That was built in 1917. That one was constructed strictly for the copper operation. Back in those days, you know, they decided that they wanted to not just smelt lead, but they decided to get into copper.
And the first stack, the one that was built in 1917, that one wasn't visible any longer after the 1966 one was placed in.
That one was demoed in 1973. The purpose of that was to build number one asset plant.
Also, you had another stack that was 610.
Yeah, that was the lead stack. That was built in 1950.
That was a very tall, thin one. And when they took the two stacks down, it was that one from 1950. Plus the one we're all familiar with,
right,
the
800-foot stack.
And they blew them within about 20 seconds of each other.
That's right.
It became one event. And do you remember what happened? Jorge, were you over there?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
Did you go watch the stacks come down?
No, I didn't.
Well, there's something. Go look at some video. It's really kind of bizarre. Because the first stack that they blew was the older one, the 600-foot stack. And they blew it right, and it fell exactly. They notched it like a tree. If you're going to cut a tree with an axe, you put a notch on one side and cut the other side. They did that with dynamite. They notched a big hole on one side with jackhammers, and then when they came time, the rest of the notch occurred with dynamite. Well, the first stack that went down was the old one. It separated, I guess, about 200 feet from the top, and the top piece flew by itself for about 3 seconds. It made a weird, weird whistle, like the bottle of the top of a Coke bottle. You blow in it. It made a weird whistling sound on its way down. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It's in all our
videos.
We
call it the champagne bottle. It blew the cork.
Jorge, that's about all we got for you on stacks. What do you think?
Well, I don't know about the rest of the community, but I'm not really sorry to see that stacks are gone because I didn't think they were really aesthetic.
Well, as it goes, you know, your choices are over. But the thing was, if they had kept them, your choices would be very precarious from now until the day they came down. There was no way to take those stacks down peacefully. You can't just go up there and knock a chip off of them and keep going because the labor will kill you. So they did it with dynamite, and if they hadn't done it then and they tried to put houses around or something around the base of it, sooner or later the liability would fall on somebody. So, all right, Jorge, thanks for stirring us up.
Okay.
You take
welcome.
It.
Take care, Jorge.
And that, you know, that's a weird problem because so many people wanted to save the stacks, but they had no capacity to save them or take care of them. But they wanted somebody else to take that on. City Council took a vote and said, no way. And they were the last crowd that could even possibly get near that. So, I mean, it would have been interesting to keep him up there. But, Ed, do you remember what happened when the big one actually hit the ground? It shattered it like glass.
Yes, it did.
Concrete, hard concrete, old concrete, when it gets impacted, it blows up.
Yeah, well, you know, concrete, after It's been standing to all kinds of weather, you know, expansion, contraction, you
and
name
the heat
it.
From inside.
Right, and all that. And then plus, prior to the acid plants that we had there, you know, sulfuric acid that percolates into the soil like sand, it heaves up foundations. It solidifies it. You know, it's like alkali, foundation that's concrete that's exposed to alkali, it breaks up, you know, it pulverizes. And that's not a very good sign.
I went back over there the next day. I had cameras and permission to get on site. And there wasn't a piece of that stack any bigger than the hood of a car.
That's right.
I mean, you know how big that was, and there were two stacks.
Right.
And at the bottom, they were 3 foot thick of concrete.
Correct.
Did you ever see the inside of that when they tamped all the dynamite in there? I only got pictures. But they loaded like 300 pounds of dynamite in that thing. And when it went, it went.
That's right.
Like, you know, crunching through a bale of hay with firecrackers. It just blew up. It was amazing. All right. The idea of living on a Sarka was something we were also looking at. Any other thoughts? Ed Cheslick, you lived there for a while. Your dad was an operator of a
safety
guy.
Yeah.
A lot of safety guys got the houses, apparently.
Apparently so.
Staska is a...
Skasta.
Skasta. He lived over there, too.
Yeah.
Hey, Ed Santiesa, but how come you never got a house, dude?
I salvaged the material and built me a barn.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
So you
compromised. That's correct. You
compromised.
Those are facts, yeah.
You got a barn out of it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I got a barn out of it. I've done all kinds of projects.
Did you get the cast iron bathtubs out of them?
No, I didn't.
There were some very unusual things in that smelter. I hope you got a bunch of them. What I'd love to see, and I've got a bunch of stuff that he's telling me I could take, the bankruptcy guy. We took buckets and buckets of the orange concrete chips. And we've been selling those in acrylic cases. If you'd like a chip of the stack, they got some on sale at the cash register at Pepe's out there in Canyon T. If you want to buy one,
yeah,
you can get one out there. Anyway, but we're going out there
personal.
Today. By the way, Pepe's is the chosen landing spot for lunch today. Ed and Maria, you guys are going to make it out here? Ed says yes. Maria says yes. Okay, Maria's going. And then the Cheslicks aren't going to make it today.
I have a grandson's had a birthday party.
And you got a Miller beer shirt on anyway. You got a good deal with that.
I'm going with them.
Yeah, let's follow him around.
That's where I'm going. I'm going to go to their birthday party.
But the idea of the smelter, when people don't understand what was there, all of us who grew up in El Paso, we look at that and say, oh, yeah, it's gone. I remember when it was there. It was kind of weird to have a smelter there now it being gone.
Right. You know, there's so much history on the El Paso smelter. Back in the times when natural gas was discovered, you know, for fuel to burn on the furnaces, guess who brought the 6-inch pipeline from Midland, Odessa? ASARCO.
ASARCO was the customer.
That's right. It came all the way up here, and it became an intrastate pipeline. And the pipeline, it carried 105 PSI natural gas.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
I alluded to this in the last hour. I didn't get to it. The oxygen plant. So you have natural gas coming into the plant to go into the furnaces, and up against that, they were putting in there almost pure oxygen.
Well, we for atomizing fuel, we needed oxygen so we could have a hotter flame, you know, on the burners, you know. So that really helped a lot. You know, you're not getting the ambient air into that, so you enrich it with oxygen, and that really makes a good blowtorch.
Well, you had that oxygen plant, 400 yards away on another part of the property?
Right.
And a big line going over there. Right. Now, you didn't actually put liquid
air. No liquid.
Air.
It was just compressed.
It turned back into air.
Right.
Or oxygen.
Yeah, compressed oxygen, and then they separated the nitrogen out of it, you know.
So think about this big school bus that's a furnace.
Right.
Huge, thick walls, open enough on the top that they can close, and they dump all this ore in there and start firing it up. One end coming in is this natural gas.
Right.
The other end coming in is pure oxygen.
Well, it's mixed with the burners itself. You have the natural gas as the fuel, and then you're atomizing air as your oxygen.
So it comes in as a mixture.
It mixes with that, you know.
Man, that must have burned
and,
hot.
And the reason they call it reverberatory furnace is because it's an up-and-down wave heat wave that heats up the whole furnace. And the furnace, they were 25 foot wide by 125 feet long.
Now, that's made out of bricks.
That's right.
That's the old days, the
reverberatory
furnace.
Right, made out of brick, and then also we had it walls cooled off with copper jackets.
Those are bizarre operations.
It was.
I mean, if you make a mistake there, everybody knew it.
That's right. Yeah.
You know what, Ed, you had a thought.
Yeah. I was going to say, when you drove into the plant, did you ever see the first guard check they ever built right there as you drove in?
It was there, but it wasn't operating.
Well, we got to see that they had actually had a guard, and the theory was that the guard there was another entryway for the delivery trucks to come in.
Right.
So they couldn't go underneath that trestle to come out. Only cars went through there.
That's right.
So the trucks would come off to the side. When I was growing up, we had to walk that way to get the bus right there.
Oh. You had to wait for a train or a truck to go by.
Or actually a train.
Bizarre history over there of Asarco. There's so many things. Engineering-wise, I presume now, in fact, I'm pretty sure now, they're smelting copper in El Paso in places where you don't even know it. The gases are nothing compared.
No.
And down there at Freeport-McMoRan.
Yeah.
Today, they're doing all the copper operations.
Well, actually, all the copper they're getting at the Freeport is cathodes. You know, that's not, that's a different operation in itself. What they do is they mine the ore and everything, and then they lay layers of the copper ore, and then they sprinkle it with sulfuric acid, you know, and that solidifies it and makes electrolyte.
Oh, in the tank house.
Yeah, so the electrolyte, it's sort of like a bluish turquoise color, you know.
Right.
So it contains copper. So on the tank house, what it is, if you ever drop a wrench or a piece of pipe, you'll clad the object with copper.
Yeah. Wow. It's a bizarre operation.
Right.
Well, we're almost at another break time here. We're going to do should we take a break slightly early, Sergio? He's up for it. And Sergio, again, it's good to see you across the glass there. Don't ever do that
sick thing again.
We can't handle that. So in the meantime, you got the folks up on Facebook?
Yes, I got them up there.
That crazy picture up there that shows you the end of the Asarco, and that's history right there in that picture. And that's before I-10 came in. Interesting. So take a look at that on Facebook. All right, taking a break here. Coming back in just a moment. Sergio, hit the button.
Are you putting your retirement savings in a 401k, IRA, or investment account? Then I have one word of advice. Stop. Many experts warn of a stock market crash any day now. And if it's anything like the last two crashes, you could lose 50% or more of your hard-earned savings in the Wall Street casino. Can you afford to lose half of your retirement savings again? Hey, you don't have to lose a penny, because there's a better, safer way to save for retirement. And you can learn all about it in a free report. This is the report Wall Street and big banks desperately hope you never see. Why? Because this method continues to grow your money even when the market tumbles. It lets you take back control of your money and finances, and it gives you penalty-free access to your savings. Plus, it beats the pants off any 401k or IRA. These are uncertain times, so get the information you need today to guarantee your retirement security. To get this free report, go to bankonyourself.com right now. That's bankonyourself.com. Bankonyourself.com.
Readings based on a 2018 survey of 1,600 U.S. singles.
I'm Grant Langston, the CEO of eHarmony. If you're online dating and looking for love, you're probably tired of the lazy text messages, dead-end conversations, and matches that never turn into dates. eHarmony's different. We're the number one trusted dating site and have the highest quality matches. There's one app built to bring you real love, eHarmony. Go to eHarmony.com today and get a free month included when you buy a three-month plan. Use code MEET. eHarmony.com, code MEET.
What would you do if you won the lottery? Maybe take a long vacation. Bahamas, Maui, Paris. Maybe fill an entire pool with nacho cheese and have the world's biggest nacho party. Maybe get that tractor you've always wanted. Well, the Texas Lottery has paid out more than $21 billion to lottery winners. People who simply had a dream and bought a ticket. Lottery.com makes it even easier to play and track winnings. Download the Lottery.com app and get your first ticket for free. So go ahead, dream on. What would you do if you won? Go to Lottery.com to learn more.
LifeLock Identity Theft Protection has added Norton Security to help protect you against cyber criminals. Protection for your identity and devices. Go to LifeLock.com, enter promo code RISK for an extra 10% off the low starting price of $7.99 a month. Terms apply.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Okay, we've been talking about Asarco, the history over there. Got a couple of people that worked there, lived there, that kind of thing. Now, I guess
There's more stories to come out of
there. Well, that's just it. There's so much left to tell. We have done one video. I'd like to do a second one on the operation of the plant. We've got the footage. We also did do a video on the ghost stories of El Paso, specifically the smelter. Now, Colette, you had a question. You just wanted to have us talk about the ghosts.
Yeah, I think we should talk about the ghosts a little bit. I think there was a cemetery there, and I know there's some stories there, probably that Edwin could speak a little bit to and all that.
Depends on who you ask, Edwin.
When you guys went into the main office, you guys were saying that there was an angry person in there?
Yes.
I always thought that was the plant manager.
It probably was.
Bill Kelly. I always heard he was always angry.
Well, when we went in with the psychic, I mean, the guy's deceased, and so he thought he was still alive, and he was sitting there working, and here we were messing with him. And he got real mad at that. But the psychic could deal with him. And I'm just watching him. I had no idea what was going on. Our only indication there was something occurring in my camera was these little balls of light flying around. Now, you laugh at this, but until you experience it, you may think it's funny. What are your thoughts?
It's on the video. I mean, you can see, I don't know, I guess hundreds of orbs of light and the different colors and different sizes. And to me, that was amazing to see on the video.
Well, you can. Some people say, well, you're just video recording dust particles. No, we were not.
Your lenses were dirty.
Yeah.
No, because we'd walk into a room, Ed, and the psychic would say, turn around in that corner, there's going to be something. And all the still cameras would shoot that corner, and all of a sudden, yes, there was something there. Maria?
Well, I got to see that those particles.
The orbs
on the pictures, and I'm not sure about what to think about that.
Well, the psychic got overwhelmed by some of them. And you may remember she went running out of the powerhouse. She couldn't take it anymore. She takes on the sorrow of the people. And so that's how she finds them, so she had to get out of it. But that's just a footnote, actually, on what we did, because the main videos we did were during the day. At night, we took cameras in with the psychic. And it's just an interesting combination. We have one video out on the smelter itself, Last Tour of the El Paso Smelter, Volume 1. But the other video we did on the smelter is Ghost Stories of El Paso, Volume 4. And
I'm sure that's quite interesting.
That's the one that you're talking
about.
That one is a bit unusual. And by the time to four, we were able to deal with the ghosts a whole lot better. Ed, you're not a believer there, Edwin.
No, I'm not. But I was going to say, when you were doing that, did you go to where the old Asarco, where the nurse was at one time, in that office area there? Did you guys get a chance to go over
we
there?
We were in what used to be the hospital, and there were some very
clinic?
Very strange things going on in there, according to the psychic. Oh, yeah, no, she found people everywhere. Oh. And the only reason I went was because she said she was going to release the souls. And I thought, well, that's a noble gesture. Most people want to just go capture a ghost squeaking or something. That's rude.
Yeah.
To me, that's just rude.
Didn't I just read recently that the Asarco Cemetery is now considered historical now?
Oh, it is. It's a designated historical cemetery in the state of Texas. Yes, it is.
Can you still bury people there?
I believe there's one or two plots left, but you have to own them already. And it's a family thing. And that's how, as I understand it. And if you want to get somebody involved in that, I guess you'd have to call the Catholic diocese because they actually own the cemetery now. So that's what that is.
Yeah, they would. Could we have the same thing with Concordia? Concordia is not an open cemetery per se, but you have to have a grave site or know someone who's selling one to be buried there.
If you want to see something, you want to see something unusual, that video will show you some unusual thing. The other video, the one we did on Last Tour of the El Paso Smelter, the one where Ed Santiesteban and Hamilton Underwood took us around the whole plant. For days and days and days. And that was hot, Ed.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was cool. It wasn't running.
Well, by 8 a.m. we were filming. By 11 a.m. we were dead. Yeah. And we were running out of batteries. We were running out of patience. Well, running out of water.
Climbing up them staircases, they'll wear you out.
I gotta tell you, the worst thing in the entire smelter that we had to get and deal with was the pigeon poop.
Oh,
my God. That was awful. That was the worst yet. I mean, for 10 years that thing had been open. And it had been full, and we stepped on it and cracked the gases. Oh, you don't want to know about that.
Did you get a chance to go to the laundry area where they actually washed all the clothes?
Yeah. I mean, that now was where they put their admin building trailer. But they tore that laundry down. And you're talking about the shower area?
No, they made a laundry room or wash area where they had all the jumpsuits and everything they were keeping that there toward right before they shut down.
That's adjacent to the...
Yeah, that was the General Bathhouse.
Adjacent to the bathhouse.
But before the General Bathhouse was built, back where the blast furnace were and the 600-foot stack, there used to be a laundry up there downstairs in the basement.
Well, gentlemen, I'm not sure where this is going. And ladies, thank you for coming in. The rest of some of us are going to Pepe's for lunch. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for the stories. And I guess the future stories, if they're to be, maybe we'll look at a museum someday. Right. I know Ruben Escandone Jr. with the Mount Restoration Committee, he's keen on doing a museum of the smelter.
I would like to see it.
I'd love to see one. And if we can talk him into it, it'd be great to have it right there on site. But, again, UTEP's bought the property or buying the property. I hope that building is not in the way of something.
You know, it'd be nice if that general office would be converted into a museum.
That'd be great,
you know, because it all started as a laboratory, you know, for testing the it was an SA lab, you know.
That would be a nice thing
and
to do.
And the two-story part of the building, that used to be the general office, and right across the street was the laboratory for assays, and upstairs used to be the engineering.
And your engineering was over there. All right. Yeah. Ed Santiesteban, thank you for coming in. Edwin Cheslick, thank you. And ladies, appreciate that. We're out of here for today.
We're out of here.
Thank you, Control Room. Shelley Sutherland on the phone. Sergio
Valenzuela is back again.
Everybody else, you're going to bed. EPHistory.com, y'all, for the details of the radio show.
That's right.
See you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks, gang.
I'm back next week. See
you're
you
back.
Then. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the El Paso History Show. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday morning, 10 to noon, and be sure to tell a friend about us. Brought to you by ephistory.com, the website for archive podcasts of this radio show, and DVDs about El Paso history and heritage, ephistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, making the old Griggs recipes in a new location, 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. Call 915-581-7099. And by Monterey Asset Management, for your real estate investments. Thank you for joining us from the studios of News Radio 690 KTSM AM, El Paso.